1, 2, 3, 4.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today we welcome back the Indigo Girls. As I lay my burden down now, in the cradle of an elegy, in a shotgun shape of the slide, I'm happy, happy in a solid key. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome Amy Ray and Emily Saliers, the Indigo Girls, back to the show. Good to see you both.
Hey.
Good to be back.
Good to be here.
Great to have you. As we were saying before the interview, this is the second time we've had a chance to visit and talk shop. The last show going back to 2007. I went back and looked it up, and I was like, oh, my God, don't tell me it's that long. Yes, 2007. I'm sure that the Indigo Girls will be very familiar to our listeners through their 15 studio albums, 4 live recordings, solo albums. And we'll maybe touch a little bit on your new project, because that's new stuff for you. Multiple Grammy nominations and a Grammy Award winner. Maybe where we can start is Montana. Let's just maybe talk about your impressions, your connections to Montana, other than being on Musician Spotlight darn near 10 years ago.
We've done a lot of work with Honor the Earth here in Montana. Honor the Earth is a group that Amy and I helped start with Native American activist Winona LaDuke, and we met her at an Earth Day concert. We started Honor the Earth around 1991, so we're 3 decades in now, and we've done a lot of environmental work with mining in Montana and the Sweetgrass Hills and
bison. We did some stuff with Yellowstone, with buffalo, and we did some stuff with Native Action and getting out the Indian vote a long time ago too, it was like a successful, really cool campaign, and kind of turned us on to like the way you can organize and really, leverage and kind of work within the system while you're working outside of the system too. Yeah, I mean, obviously Montana's got a wealth of resources and a lot of tribes, and we really try to work on positive energy development instead of negative stuff. So we've ended up trying to support tribes up here that are doing good things. And I think my friend was telling me the Salish and Kootenai are trying to get to be recognized as kind of to take care of the bison herd and the bison range. Mm-hmm. There's always something happening. And we just got back from, we just went to Standing Rock and spent a couple days there at that protest in North and South Dakota, kind of right there on the borderline at on the banks of the Cannonball River. And that was really moving. And, you know, we got involved just to support the protesters. And then an interesting thing happened is that we had played a music festival, unbeknownst to us, that was owned by the man who is the owner of Energy Transfer Partners, who's building that pipeline.
Oh.
And someone pointed it out to us. And so we got even more involved because we were like, we didn't know that we had, you know, and now we've got this letter that all these musicians have signed on that we're going to be sending out to him to boycott his festival. And we're certainly not going to play it anymore.
Yeah.
And trying to just, but also trying to encourage him to look at what his company is doing, because all of the music that he loves and supports is all made by people who do human rights work, like Jackson Browne and, you know, Bonnie and all these, just the list is like, oh yeah, these are all like basically like progressive left-wing bands, mm-hmm. and that's his favorite music.
Yeah, interesting.
And so we wrote a letter and said, there's a disconnect here. And we want you to know that we appreciate what you love in music, but can you please like support these tribes?
I find that really interesting. It reminds me of Bono becoming friends with Jesse Helms.
Oh,
who, because they were on polar opposites of things socially and politically. And his theory was, yeah, but that's all the more reason I need to befriend him and try to communicate with him.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me, because I remember in our last interview, one of the things that Emily was saying was that when writing songs and this was a reflection of, you know, your activism, that you've always striven.
Good word.
I like striven. Strive to be for objectivity.
You don't want to alienate. I mean, the only way to bring people around is to sort of find the common ground, and then sometimes it's not going to change anything, and sometimes it is, and whatever. But you can't, if you start in a negative position, it's not really going to work. Instead of just trying to knock people over the head with all these things, we try to provide positive alternatives to the negative things we're talking about.
There comes a time, eventually, when the cold black water goes under the bridge. So I say yes, we can meet up. Wish you hadn't learned it on me. And you were always just more gifted at illusion.
You wanna thank
One of the things that occurred to me when looking back over your work over all these years is that you definitely bring your social activism into your music. And I know there's some musicians who, it's not a given that you would do both. You know what I'm saying? You could be socially conscious and an activist and maybe not do that with your music or mm-hmm. vice versa. So I guess my question in this is, when bringing that social activism into your songwriting, how do you find the balance between making sure that you articulate your position and your feelings and your beliefs, also making sure you have a great song? Mm-hmm. Because you do it very well. You know what I'm saying? The songs stand up in and of themselves musically. Is that something you're even conscious of, trying to strike that balance?
Yeah, it's very, very hard to write a protest song. Or Amy's very good at it. I'm not as good. I mean, I wrote like a song like Hammer and a Nail that's, you know, kind of like a pop get to work song, get out of your head and get to work in the world. Mm-hmm. But the balance is very, very difficult to achieve.
It's really hard. I remember I think like there's two kinds of songs. There's like the songs that are like really specific to a specific issue. Like when Rage Against the Machine would do a lot of songs about Zapatistas and different, you know, things they were talking about, globalization, and they were so good at it, you know. And I actually think hip hop and rap is a really good arena for that, because it's spoken, it's like a way, it's just a way that you can be didactic in some ways. Mm-hmm. And if you're good at it, then it works.
Yeah.
Folk songs are harder to do that in, because mm-hmm. You come off as being overly earnest and overly preachy.
Yeah.
But I think like then there's songs like We Shall Overcome that can be sung in any context in a protest that are amazing songs to have in our, you know, arsenal of protest songs.
Yeah.
And to write one of those is, it's almost impossible. It's like, you know, it's like the thing you want is to write like a new song that's a new protest song mm-hmm. that can grab people, that's simple but strong, and you could sing it in Standing Rock, but you could also sing it at the WTO protest, you know, mm-hmm. years ago or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you do that? I don't know. It's beyond me.
Yeah.
But it is a goal.
Women can't really get away with it. They're just immediately branded as what Amy is saying, as earnest. And especially if you write one with an acoustic guitar, forget about it. But if you're a man, you can get away with it more easily. I really believe that.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Amy Ray and Emily Saliers, the Indigo Girls. I want to go a little bit deeper into songwriting, and I know you talk about this endlessly. I'm always interested in melody and what informs your sense of melody when you're writing a song.
Wow.
Whoa.
I have no idea. I mean, I really feel like the content oftentimes informs the melody or the chord progression, but there's really no rules to it, because you can write a song and change your chords and just keep your melody pretty, pretty simple and have chord movement underneath, and it has a different sort of emotional impact than a melody that's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. I don't know, Amy, do you have any thoughts on that?
Melody is like my goal. Like, I want to be better at that. I think Emily's got the melody thing. It's like innate sometimes. And I think it's hard to learn how to write melody. I mean, honestly, I listen to a lot of Burt Bacharach when I want to like figure out like.
See, I think that's
it's
this
like,
is really cool.
Burt Bacharach is so, like, that's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
And then also like Hank Williams Sr., like people that could play three chords and sing a melody over it that didn't feel like just three chords. The Carter mm-hmm. family was good at that as well. And some of those early songwriters that wrote sort of in Tin Pan Alley that just did all that. The melodies are just, like, you can rotate, the melody kind of rotates and comes back around to itself. And then it's just like, how did they make that work? And I study it, and I don't know how. I just think melody's so hard. But, like, it's true, like, Mitchell Froom, one of our producers, showed me this one time, like what Emily's talking about. You can take your melody and rearrange all the chords underneath it, and it shifts how your melody sounds. And it's a good trick to start learning how to develop your melodies in a better way, I guess, because it shows you just the effect of the chords, and mm-hmm. it may draw you to go a different place too. So he showed me that, and that's helped me a lot. But, oh my God, it's like the melodies to me is so, well, I covet a good melody, but I have such a hard time with it.
I can go one day without calling, 2 days without bawling, 3 days without missing, but a lifetime with no kissing you. It's something that I just can't do. I wish I could be there to share the moon. I got more back for the breaking, more callous for making, a lifetime for the aching. I got no need to run this battery down. I'm just trying to get the stains out. I wish I could be there to share the moon. Hey Lila, I'm gonna love you till it hurts. I don't mind if I do. Hey Lila, I'm gonna love you till it works. I got no mind to lose. Trash heap burning, them fireflies are returning, nightfall is softly chirping, one trailer light is staying on till dawn. I wonder who it's waiting on. I wish I could be there to share the moon. Hey Lila, I'm gonna love you till it hurts. I don't mind if I do. Hey Lila, I'm gonna love you till it works. I got no mind to lose.
Amy and Emily, what are you enjoying most at the moment in terms of what's happening in your musical life?
I mean, playing with Emily, you know, it's kind of always great because we always have our friends come out on the road with us, and we're on the same page. So it's just a good thing to share, and we're sort of always trying to evolve. So Emily's working on a solo project. And I get to kind of see that happening, but it's Emily's thing, but it always feels like part of our musical life. And when I do my thing, it feels like part of our musical life. And so it's a tapestry, and it's constantly being woven.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited about this solo record. It's been a long time coming, and it's very challenging. It's way different process. And yesterday we got to Spokane, and we were in our dressing rooms, and I just got overwhelmed this feeling of love for Amy. And this is personal and probably dorky, but I knock on her dressing room and I'm like, I just want to tell you I love you and I really love playing with you, because it's like, you know, Amy's like the old friend. I mean, not old, like, but
I'm
just
old.
Still inspiring, like old as opposed to new friend. And like the solo project is a new friend and kind of exciting because I'm just getting to know it.
And yeah.
But Amy's like, you know, she's the best, the best old friend. And so what a gift to be able to experience both.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited. I'm very, very challenged by this solo project. It's a different approach to writing. It's a different approach to production. So I'm kind of like, but I'm doing it. But at the center of it all is Indigo Girls. I just feel at this point in my life, we were just talking 50s to new 30. I'm really glad because I feel more joyful in the present moment than I ever have surrounding music.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Amy Ray and Emily Saliers, the Indigo Girls. I put out on Facebook that I was going to be speaking with you both today, and we had some of our listeners who wanted to ask some questions. So I wanted to try to get some of these. Maybe we can try to, try to be a little more brief with our responses. Okay. But the first one was actually one of my friends from Spokane. He wanted to know, with all your travels, what's your favorite meal?
Oh, my goodness.
There's 10 favorite meals.
Yeah.
You mean like what food do we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I like so many different kinds of ethnic food, Korean and Thai and Ethiopian. And
well, I'll say Penang curry if it's Thai, a Greek salad if it's Mediterranean, a saag paneer if it's Indian, and a masala dosa if it's Southern Indian. And I love beans and rice and guacamole.
And I love cheeseburgers with American cheese.
There we go.
From In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah.
Chris from Great Falls remembers a time that you opened for the Grateful Dead, and he wanted to ask if you're, about your recollections of opening for the Dead.
Oh, man.
It was one of the best moments of our whole life. I mean, there was a show that we did in Oregon, and Eugene, I don't know, Jerry was alive still.
Standing there on the side of
the stage.
Standing
on the side of the stage.
Oh, that would be intimidating.
And, oh, God, it was just like, they were like a traveling, like, community because, and they treated everybody really well and fed everyone, and it was very familial. Hmm. And, very communal. And I remember walking around the parking lot before the show and just looking at all the different Deadhead tailgate parties and camping. And so we went out there and we were shaking in our shoes at this big, like, stadium kind of place. And it was like 30,000 people. And we were just like, I could have just thrown up right there.
It was awesome.
but then it worked out because the fans, because their audience is at the time just so great. Mm-hmm. And they were really behind us.
Now, totally different direction here. Jack from our Facebook page, it's a very different question. How do your feminist principles influence your interplay of inspiration, empowerment, and making a living as a musician?
Hmm. Well, I mean, we've been together a long time. We've gone through a lot of things that were, sexist, like when Amy knew how to run sound very, very early on, and we got some flack from sound people, and then we, we'd go after we got signed to a major and we'd go into radio stations and the men program directors and DJs just did not know how to relate to us. And it was just obvious, they're just used to relating to women as objects. And so we had, some of like those experiences. But I think that, if you listen to the lyrics, we're feminists and you can hear it in some of the actual lyrics of the music, but you also just get it with our social activism ties and what we support and what groups we support. And so I think it influences everything, It just, it's the lens through which I'll speak for myself, through which I view life, as a woman. But we're also not just feminist, but we support the fluidity of gender and rights, human rights and civil rights and being who you are and not so focused on the binary understanding of sexuality or humanity. And so, feminism, but also sort of allism.
Yeah, and I think like we've tried to, on a business level, we've had various engineers and techs. We've tried to focus on developing, different female kind of talent. Just trying to focus on that in your business and like just pay attention to it. Who's playing in your band, who opens for you, who's, just everything. Like keeping it. It's a lens, as Emily says. Yeah. You just have to see through that lens. Yeah, well, me and Johnny see a rainbow star.
Just move on. earth just to know she breathes. Give her Johnny, she's got what I need. Emma, she's gonna let me bleed. And I'll just be Misty again at the Olympia and out into that pouring rain. Get it, Johnny.
Listening back to the last time we spoke, I opened our interview with asking you this, and I'm going to close it. I'm going to ask you to talk about some of your musical guilty pleasures at the moment. And last time, Amy mentioned the Partridge Family, and Emily mentioned Ashley Simpson and JoJo. So presently, do you have any musical guilty pleasures?
Taylor Swift. Which I don't really feel guilty about because I think she's a great songwriter. And the soundtrack from Frozen.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not guilty for me either. I mean, because it's talent. Justin Bieber, incredible voice. Really well-produced records. And I love the Frozen soundtrack, too.
We have to. We have little girls.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, and yeah, Hamilton's not a guilty pleasure, except that if you listen to it too much, it's... No, there's nothing wrong with listening to it too much. It's just, it's the best.
I should say I put quote marks around guilty pleasures.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't know
about. Yeah.
I don't know if I trust somebody who doesn't have something like that in their musical, in their CD collection.
Yeah,
if they don't
totally.
Have some John Denver or ABBA or something
like
that.
Well, John Denver. You know, we know all those songs.
He was my first concert.
I could sing you a few John Denver songs.
Oh, man. Well, I know we need to wrap up the interview. Amy and Emily, thank you so much for making time to speak with us here on Musician Spotlight. It's been great to visit with you again.
Thanks for having
you
us.
You too. Thank you.
Seems like a long time, but it's been no time.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been the Indigo Girls. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.